Hi, and welcome to Filmmakers Compass Podcast, the show where we talk about movies and, well, more movies. I'm D-Man, joined by CP. CP, how are you doing today?
Great, man. How are you? Super excited that we get to talk about, well, the topic we're talking about.
Yeah, we have a good one in store for everybody. Now, before we dive into our topic this week, as usual, CP, we do have some shout-outs. And this week, they almost exclusively go to Ivor. So Ivor shared basically a thought train based on our conversation last week on the MCU. So we have to address some of what he's talking about here. But I also would like to note that he's going in depth with some of this, and this may literally be a topic that we just need to bring Ivor on the show for, because we probably need him to explain these topics in greater detail than long blocks of text, and try to, maybe have a conversation with him about some of his theories regarding Marvel's MCU. So if you're down for it, Ivor, that's probably something that we should probably do. Before we get into Ivor's messages, I did want to acknowledge both Anthony and David, who I saw this weekend, two of our biggest listeners. Appreciate you guys. And both of them commented that while they are enjoying the podcast, they also would probably like to come on as a guest and hopefully contribute some of their thoughts to discussion around, well, we'll pick movies for the guests if there's anything specific they would ever want to talk about.
I guess it depends. I'm not too keen to have Anthony come on and talk about how he likes, you know, the Batman more than any other Batman. I'm sorry. That's just stupid.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly what we will need to do. And Anthony, we are open to that, despite CP's, kind of disdain for that thought process.
I thought he was such a cool guy, and then he started just speaking nonsense and,
No, it'll work out. So first up then, we're going to dive into Ivor's notes here. So he literally comments and says, I should have taken notes during this podcast. I have many thoughts and theories. So, I'm taking notes on your notes, Ivor. So, and then hopefully if we get a chance, we can have a deeper conversation here. So he goes on to say, I think Marvel was thrown off course with COVID, the actor-writer strike, Chadwick Boseman and Jonathan Majors, Chadwick Boseman, RIP, unfortunately passing away, and Jonathan Majors being actually found guilty of the crimes he was accused of. So all happening during this saga. Something happens, they course correct. Something else happens, they course correct again. This saga should be named the Course Correction Saga. I could say more on this, but I think you get what I'm saying. And yes, I do get what you're saying, Ivor, and I think that is a good point in that, unlike most of all the Infinity Saga, where we didn't really have any major disruptions, it was just ascension. It just felt like Marvel was on, this fantastic ride to the stars, and everybody wanted to be a part of it. And there weren't any major roadblocks or bumps or anything, and it all sort of went smoothly. And then you get to this phase four and you're like, dang, yeah, a lot changed. I think even to that point was James Gunn initially being fired from Guardians of the Galaxy 3, which I know they had bigger plans for initially than I think we even got in the Guardians of the Galaxy 3 version we actually saw in theaters. So there were a lot of things that really sort of like through this phase four for a loop, and now in I guess technically phase five, where it just doesn't feel as cohesive, and there were a lot of external things for that. So I agree, Ivor. Second, he says Moon Knight is not done. I think he will be part of some supernatural group, Blade, Ghost Rider, Man Thing, Werewolf by Night. What do you think about that, CP? Would you be down for that group?
Maybe at Once Upon a Time he was supposed to be, but I don't think that those plans are going to be going forward.
Well, I do think Marvel is paring back, right? According to Bob Iger, and even at some actual announcements surrounding things that have either already been shot or were planned to be shot. Things are getting cut. I think Ironheart was one of them. Mm-hmm. If it hasn't, I don't know if they've announced Ironheart's over, but like my guess is it probably is. Armor Wars, they've talked about that as a movie, they've talked about that as a Disney Plus show again. I don't know if that's gonna happen. You know, there's just, I don't know. There's the Agatha series, which I believe was shot. And I don't know if Marvel is like, we're ever gonna release this or we're gonna cut it. I don't know. So, I mean, it's hard to say. I think, obviously, to your point, Ivor, I do think that was probably the plan. That was what they were going to do. Now, whether they're going to see that through is really what's up in the air here. It's so hard to tell which of the Marvel projects are actually going to be, you know, released, honestly. They had too many. So we'll start there. He goes on to say, third, saying that Deadpool 3 will put Marvel back where they need to be is just wrong to say, unless they mean a Marvel movie back on top money-wise, which another good point, Ivor. I think money-wise, Deadpool 3 will do that.
Yeah, it'll probably make about $1 billion.
Yeah, I think it'll, I mean, Marvel isn't releasing very many movies this year, and they haven't really in the last roughly, you know, year, going back to last year around like Guardians 3, I think. You know, they haven't really put out a whole lot since then. And Deadpool's the only thing I think they have major on the calendar for this year. So I do think, to your point, money-wise, absolutely, Deadpool 3 is going to make a shitload of money. So Marvel will be back on top there. But will it just instantly make the MCU the best thing going in film again? I don't think so. So he does go on to say, I think Deadpool 3 is not about beginnings as much as it is about endings. With the TVA in the multiverse, which is a reference to the Loki show, just think where and who we are going to see. Anyone rooting to see Colin Farrell's Bullseye or John Travolta's character from The Punisher? I am putting my money on this movie tying up all the old. I'm putting my money on this movie trying to explain all those old Marvel characters, maybe even Howard the Duck. This was all just me theorizing. So what do you think, CP? Or is this going to be sort of like, instead of a Spider-Man, you know, where they bring in the old Spider-Man versions and they have this mixed Spider-Verse? Do you think this is sort of like they're going to pull in characters from all these older Marvel properties and maybe either tie up loose ends or just kind of have some fun with it?
I think that initially that was probably part of the plan when they rolled out the multiverse. With all the course corrections that Ivor pointed out, I don't know that that's the plan going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. Obviously, Wolverine alone is huge. And we mentioned this last week on the show that, you know, unfortunately, we thought Logan might be the perfect sort of bow to the ending of the story of Logan and Wolverine. And he's coming back for more. So we don't know if that's exclusively in just Deadpool 3, and then this is truly the end, or if he's coming back and we're going to have multiple versions of Wolverine. It could be. Ivor finishes off by saying, do you think we get something from Fantastic Four? Which is interesting because we know that project is most likely going forward as they did announce, I think it was around Valentine's Day, the casting news, and they are pretty confident that that movie's definitely happening. And Fantastic Four is like a standard Marvel property. So you can bet big that that's probably not getting cut.
Probably not, though cinematically it has kind of been a bust every time.
Yeah, I think the, you know, the big news coming out this last week was that they are casting, I believe, I'm trying to think of the actress's name, but a female Silver Surfer. So we're not getting the straight Silver Surfer version that we were used to or that was in the sequel movie from the original Fantastic Four with like Jessica Alba and
Chris Evans,
Chris
yeah.
Evans and them. So that's a little bit different, but there actually is a female Silver Surfer in comic book lore. So I kind of thought the outrage around that was unsubstantiated. I didn't get that. I think if you have the character in comics lore, then that should be totally fine. And to that end, that character, the female Silver Surfer, I believe has a love story with the Silver Surfer. So it's very possible that that version that everybody was expecting may show up anyway. It's just being withheld. So that's my theory. But to finish it off, Ivor does say, feel free to contact me with your own questions about my theories. And I think we are going to need to have some deeper discussions here, CP.
Let's do it. Let's get Ivor on the show.
I know. We might just have to phone him in. I'm not sure, Ivor, what your availability or your technology looks like. But if possible, we will try to get you on the show. So just make sure that if you're driving or doing anything, you're hands-free. Keep it safe out there. So anyway, CP, that actually does it for our shout-outs. It was just, like I said, total thought train from Ivor, which I greatly appreciate. I always love getting his messages because it's almost never just like one. So I always know I'm gonna have something to look forward to when I go to our DMs.
I only like getting his messages when he agrees with me. So Ivor, definitely keep those messages up because I love to hear that.
Yeah, and Ivor, on that note as well, I didn't respond directly because I planned on just addressing it here in the shout outs and hopefully in a conversation with you. So I hope you're not, I hope your feelings aren't hurt that I didn't also write a novel in response. But we did address it. So hopefully that's enough. But CP, did you have any shout outs on this episode, or is it time to dive into our box office breakdown?
It is time for our box office breakdown. All right, everyone. So, looking at the box office numbers from this past weekend, you might be a little surprised. You might not be surprised. We had a few new movies drop, including Someone Like You, The First Omen, and Monkey Man. D-Man, did you see any of these films at all?
No, I have not been in the movies this week, although I did see Godzilla vs. Kong, as we mentioned last week, and I plan on going for the upcoming Civil War. So I am looking forward to that. I do have the AMC A-list, so it is possible that I'll catch some of these in theaters, but no, I have not been.
The disappointing news is Dune Part 2 has fallen to number 6 in the domestic box office.
It's over. Movie's done.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go see it one more time, but it might be out of theaters by like in the next 2 weeks.
I heard they did extend IMAX showings. So if you haven't seen it in IMAX, which I know at one point you hadn't, you can
No,
still catch that.
I have now. I have. I'm good. I haven't seen as many times on IMAX as you have, but now I think I've seen Dune like Part 2 like 7 more times than you, so I guess that balances
Well,
out
I
in the
got
end.
two in IMAX, so
All
eat it.
right, fine, I'll go see it in IMAX again. Point received. Kung Fu Panda number 4, or I'm sorry, Kung Fu Panda 4 is 5th in the box office, with the opening The First Omen in the 4th place,
Okay.
and that has only made about $8 million, which probably is
Ooh.
kind of a bust.
It's a light week at the box office then.
Yeah. Ghostbusters has fallen from the 2 spot to the 3 spot, and the new film Monkey Man opened up at 10 million, and that is in the number 2 position. And obviously, the number 1 spot still belongs to Godzilla Kong, the new empire.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, Godzilla and Kong are long-standing movie franchises. I think they're very accessible to almost anybody that's just looking for a fun movie-going experience. You don't have to have, even though it's a sequel, you really don't need a lot of prior knowledge to be like, let's watch monsters destroy shit.
Yeah, right. And you said
So
that. And again, it's PG-13, so you could probably bring your kids knowing that it's just giant monsters fighting.
I am a little
No.
surprised to see Ghostbusters where it is at the three. And my reasoning behind that is I know it had a pretty significant drop after its first week, which meant that either people weren't going to see it multiple times or there just was a smaller overall fandom that was interested in the movie. But at number three, even though it sounds like the box office take was pretty low, I mean, hopefully, it's enough that we can, get some more Ghostbusters in the
Well, and
future.
when we look at the worldwide box office, Ghostbusters is in the 6th spot, and it's made almost $140 million, which isn't terrible. But I think part of the problem for Ghostbusters is 65% of that box office actually comes domestically. So it performed very poorly in the global box office.
Yeah, that is interesting because a lot of movies that get greenlit often get greenlit with the anticipation that they'll make more money internationally than they probably will domestically.
Well, and I think, and the number three movies in the box office worldwide are Godzilla Kong, Kung Fu Panda, and Dune Part Two still is the number one movie in the worldwide box office. And each of those is making about 60% or even more
Yeah.
in their foreign release. So,
I mean, that's literally how we got like 10 or 11 Fast and the Furious movies.
and hopefully how we're going to get like 10 or 11 more Fast and the Furious movies.
Yeah, like they make so much money overseas. It's wild. Like I bet to be a part of that cast is actually quite incredible because you're like an international film star.
Yeah,
That's pretty
right.
dope. Like, I mean, it's one thing to be a film star here in LA and like,
Yeah.
Hollywood and all of that, but then to be like an international film star is probably like stardom on another level.
It's wild. And they do all these fun premieres, like, in all these exciting places like Tokyo and Rio and London. So way better. Anyway, so that is the worldwide box office so far. We got some great movies coming out in the next few weeks. Anything you are looking forward to, D-Man?
As I mentioned, definitely Civil War. I know A24 is on just like an epic tear,
Yeah.
sort of taking over theaters and Hollywood with their ability to connect with audiences, which is remarkable. I think we had joked about it on a previous episode about how like, in Civil War, like California and Texas are on the same side. Thought
Yeah.
that was like hilarious. And I don't know if that was done intentionally to like drive up conversation around the film, but it probably worked if it was.
Yeah,
You know, I
right.
think it got people talking online because everybody was like, yeah, they would never be on the same side. But also, like, it's kind of interesting because that gets conversations going about the topic around, the film, but also, makes you think big picture, like, what would get California and Texas on the same side? And you're like, well, there's got to be something to this movie. So let's see
Taylor
what it
Swift, that's the only thing.
is. Yeah, her Eras tour, if she kept it on the West Coast, that could do it. So East Coasters want Taylor Swift and they just can't have her. So anyway, yeah, how about you? Anything coming out that you're looking forward to?
Well, I went to the AMC Unseen screening last night, and they gave us a sneak preview of the new Guy Ritchie movie, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, and I will just tell everybody it is awesome.
Oh, nice. That's great.
I love the movie Henry Cavill, so it's good. And Guy Ritchie and tons of Nazi killing action, so it was
Now,
great.
is Henry Cavill, he's actually in this movie,
He's actually
correct?
in the movie the whole time. It's not like Argyle.
Oh, I don't know why the way I said that reminded me of Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park. Now, there will be dinosaurs on your dinosaur tour, right?
Oh, great movie.
I know, classic. So anyway, also coming out, but not in theaters, to my knowledge, is Rebel Moon Part 2. So I believe nicknamed the Scar Giver. So
Yes.
this is a film that came out. We've been recording episodes. I know we had our hiatus and then we were kind of catching up on a couple different things. The Oscars came out. We never really had a deep dive into Rebel Moon Part One. And this is something that I think you and I were both equally excited about and maybe not quite as excited after the first version. So I wanted to see if you're down to dive into a deeper conversation into what worked, what didn't. Are we looking forward to part two? And would we recommend part one? So I'm going
Yeah.
to throw it over to you first. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on Rebel Moon, part one.
Well, when Rebel Moon Part One dropped last December, I was very curious to see it. There was a lot of internet hype surrounding this movie. Obviously, this was the massive project that Netflix greenlit to lure Zack Snyder away from WB and into the Netflix fold, where essentially they gave him a green light to make any movie series that he wanted.
Wow.
More importantly, we know based on the
Zack Snyder
history,
Unleashed.
yeah, this is Zack Snyder Unleashed doing what he wants. And we know that the origins of Rebel Moon actually grew out of a rejected pitch that he submitted to Lucasfilm when they were discussing the new direction to take the Star Wars universe.
Really? So this was actually, you know, I mean, it sounds bad when you say it like this, but a failed Star Wars pitch. I mean,
Failed Star Wars pitch. Maybe it was too dark for Star Wars, right?
there
I
are
think that's
some,
probably
we're going to
another
get
thing
into
to think
that. There
about.
is some weird scenes in this movie where I was
Well,
like, oh, hell.
and we know that later this year, Netflix is going to be re-releasing the film with an R-rated cut. So I'm assuming there's more sex, violence, and language than in the current version that we've had, which is only PG-13. So that could have
Why
been a part of it
can
too.
Zack Snyder not just like release a movie?
I don't know, man.
Why does everything have to have like another cut? Like, why can't, I mean, in this case, we said Zack Snyder, or I said Zack Snyder Unleashed, you know, Netflix is like, make what you want. And yet still, the version he put out was not the final version, or his final version. Like, I get the hype train around like, oh, I want to see the director's cut or whatever. Like, I mean, maybe they're just, you know, feeding into that frenzy. But like, come on, Zack Snyder.
I think he's just that guy,
Maybe
right?
just release the best you got, and let's ride with like the best.
You know, J.J. Abrams is the lens flare guy. Michael Bay is the explosion guy. M. Night Shyamalan is the weird, trippy story guy. Zack Snyder is the director's cut guy who has to recut everything at least once, maybe twice.
I don't know. It also makes me wonder if like, I don't want to call it hedging, but is he just like sort of betting that like, hey, you know, if we release this version of the movie and people don't like it, we can always be like, there's another cut. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I think that's got to be the case, 'cause I mean, obviously he watches these movies before they get released. He probably watches it like, you know, a third of the way through the edit, and he's like, yeah, we're gonna need a director's cut.
We're gonna need
Like,
another one.
cut the best stuff and we'll release that later because this
Right.
is not as good as I thought.
So, December 22nd, 2023, Zack Snyder drops on Netflix Rebel Moon Part One. And I was very excited about this one. I got up, I was like, I need to watch this opening day because this is a big deal. I was pretty disappointed, D-Man. In
Oh,
fact, I was so
no.
disappointed that I thought, you know what, I better watch this movie again to see if it was actually as bad as I thought it was. And I did, and I was still disappointed.
Damn, so it was so good that you watched it twice.
No, it was so bad that I watched it twice.
I
And I was like, there's no way that Zack Snyder Unleashed this movie is going to be this disappointing. And in fact, it was.
Well, can we just clarify for anybody that's tuning in for the first time? You were a huge Snyder Cut Justice League fan.
Well, let's be clear. I spent about a good 20 years of my life talking smack on Zack Snyder as a filmmaker, a director, and a human being.
Wow, that's harsh.
And then he released the Snyder Cut, and I became the number one Snyder Cut fanboy on Twitter. And I loved everything about the Snyder Cut Justice League.
I mean, it was pretty cool. I actually did enjoy it, especially, I mean, it's like objectively better than the theatrical version we got. And we've had a conversation on this. So if you're interested in hearing our thoughts on, you know, the Snyder Cut and the theatrical cut and all that of Justice League, you can go back and find that episode in our feed. In terms of just your hype train sort of going into this movie, you were actually a little high on the Zack
I
Snyder.
was very optimistic that this was going to be something that we really haven't seen. And it fell flat for me. What did you think of Rebel Moon?
I mean, I do have thoughts. I think my initial thought when the movie ended was I was very hopeful that the meat of the story would be represented in part two. So to me, part one felt like, you know, hey, let's assemble the crew, let's intro all the characters and all this stuff. Then that was like the point of it. So it feels a little ancillary to me in the sense that I feel like if part two jumps right into the meat of the story and we get into what I hope Rebel Moon can actually represent as an adventure, as an action movie, as like a space opera, then I think what I would hopefully recommend to anybody that wants to check out Rebel Moon, I'd be like, watch part two first. Start with part two. That's where it gets really good. And that's still my hope to this day, is that part two is awesome. And then I would be like, if you really love part two and you're interested in where these characters came from and their origin stories and all this stuff, then go watch part one. But it did not feel very necessary to me. I felt like a lot of scenes went on way too long. I thought some of the character introductions were way overdone for a total lack of payout in this movie specifically. That's not to say that these things won't pay out in part two or however many parts he wants to make this, which, do you know the answer to that?
My understanding is this is supposed to be a 6-film series with kind of a first and second part of each story. So three
Okay.
stories, 6 movies within this universe that Netflix is all in.
Okay. Yeah, it felt long, constantly long. And so I think examples of this are like we spend a lot of time at the beginning of the movie with the like Anthony Hopkins voiced robot for that not really to go anywhere. I mean, the robot honestly disappears from the story and then just shows up like running through a field at the end. Spoiler
With
alert.
some antlers on his head.
Yeah, for no reason. So very Zack Snyder. I was like, I mean, I don't even care to know why. But in anyway, we spend a lot of time like, you know, they have a crown of flowers and it seems like there's something going on there. And then it just doesn't really go anywhere. We spend a lot of time early on, these what is it called? The motherland or something? The empire? Mother world?
Mother World.
Yeah, I think it's Mother World
They're
is the
essentially
name.
space Nazis if you haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, they're basically space Nazis, but in essence, like the empire, you know, whether you're a Star Wars fan or Dune or whatever, it's the empire. And they show up, and then we spend like a lot of time with these soldiers while they're like, you know, taking over this small farm town. Like, well, spoiler, you know, we're just going to talk spoilers. So if you're not interested in knowing the spoilers, then go ahead and tune us out for now and go watch the movie and then come back. But spoiler alert, like they all die. To me, I was like, why did we spend so much time with them? Like, we just didn't need all of this to understand that they're the bad guys. I mean, you can do that and convey that very quickly. So it feels like a total waste of screen time if those characters, I mean, literally die. They don't come back later. So, you know, it's one of the reasons why, like, you know, for the most part, like stormtroopers are just sort of like endless troopers. They just keep coming, but we never really get to know any of them because you don't need to. You know, it's not really the point of the story. So, and then this is where you were talking before. Things kind of take a dark twist. You know, there's literally like,
Well, let's stop for a sec. Let's take a step back. Let's pretend like this is creative writing in class in college.
okay.
What are the things in the film that you did find redeeming and you enjoyed? Were there any things?
Yeah,
Because, no, go ahead.
as far as some of like the world building, I feel like Zack Snyder definitely put in some time to try to create, you know, a cohesive world here. Now, whether it's received that way isn't necessarily the point I'm trying to make. What I'm trying to say is it definitely didn't feel like there wasn't care that was being put in to the creation of this movie in this world. I thought that worked. I liked the main character of Korra. I found her to be at least somewhat compelling. She has a decent backstory, and I'm interested to see where her story goes from the end of this one into the next one, which is great. You know, I think there were some cool homages to things that I do like. Now, I do have thoughts on those homages, but at the same time, like I can tell that Zack Snyder's paying respect to things that he enjoyed, scenes that really spoke to him and were important. And I can enjoy, you know, a good reference to, you know, some other things, particularly Star Wars. You know, I'm a Star Wars guy. So I thought that was fun. And then some of the action. You know, I thought there were some good action sequences, albeit, you know, a little bit maybe standalone, but there was some cool scenes. One with, you know, they kind of give off vibes of almost like missions from like a video game or something. But standalone, I think they were pretty cool. They were entertaining. Now, again, Do they go on too long and are they necessary for exactly what's happening in the story here? Maybe not, but were they cool if you just put that on and you're like, oh, that was pretty dope. Yeah, I thought that was cool. I don't know. What about you? What do you think worked?
Obviously, this movie was written, directed, and Zack Snyder is the cinematographer. So there are some really visually stunning shots in the movie. I think there's some scenes that look cinematically, they're incredible and exactly what you want out of a movie. But I think Snyder pulling from his inspirations, chiefly Star Wars, I think he also does a really good job of creating, and I know you talk about this all the time. That Lucas factor, there are elements that are just incredibly beautiful shots, almost like picturesque. And that comes from the set design, that comes from the actual cinematography. I thought that was good. He does create a world that, while we don't understand it yet, and hopefully we will learn it through the course of these films, we do get a lot of really interesting world details. Now, I think part of the frustration in part one is that they are not fleshed out. But there's a lot of elements to this where you can see that this world is much larger in scope than the film that we saw. And I think that's always a great thing.
Yeah, when you can do world building successfully, it just makes people want to spend more time there. Hopefully, like I said, that's the case because I do still have high hopes for part two. And to that end, like I'm definitely willing to come back and spend more time in this world. So it didn't turn me off in that regard, where I think sometimes, other movies you're like, yeah, I don't like it.
So I like those things. And then, as you said, some of the action sequences are really well done.
Yeah, I enjoyed them. And I think Zack Snyder's sort of known for that. Obviously, in Justice League in particular, he's known for sort of slowing things down. He is, he may not be the lens flare guy, but he is known for using, some flares and some, kind of dramatic motion graphics and different things. And those are all sort of on display here. That's, a little bit of his
It's
signature.
his
And
visual style, totally, right?
yeah. But I mean, it's a Zack Snyder film, so I expected that going in, and I shouldn't either A, hate on it, knowing that he's the one that directed it. If I don't like his style, then why am I watching his movies?
Yeah, right.
So yeah, I thought a lot of that stuff does work.
Now, I think we're both in agreement that where the movie really falls flat is from a story standpoint. And I
Correct.
can only look at this from the perspective of a producer and say, his wife was the producer on the film. I just don't think Zack Snyder had someone who he could who was honestly coming to him and saying, no, let's cut it back. We need to re-edit this. There's a little too much story for too short a film. We need to focus on showing, not telling. And that was kind of, I feel like that's really where the movie falls short.
Well, so first of all, can you even just explain? Because I don't even know if I'm remembering correctly, but like, what exactly is the mission that they assemble their team for?
Well, essentially, it's the film The Magnificent Seven or Seven Samurai, right? Bad guys come to town, they kill a bunch of people, and they say they will be returning. So, in the meantime, Korra, her farmer buddy, go out to recruit other warriors to help them defend against the space Nazi forces from who are returning.
Oh, it sounds like the space Nazis could just use a Death Star about right now, or right about now. Okay. So the point is, this movie essentially then is them assembling this team. Like, that is the plot of the movie. And if this is reminiscent of Justice League, you're probably not, off base here. It does feel like Batman and Wonder Woman being like, we need to assemble the team. Like, we got to go find the metahumans and like go do this now. So that is kind of what it is. They go assemble this team. There's a double cross, and essentially, a lot of people are murdered at the end. And that's how the movie itself plays out. It's just not paced well enough, in my opinion, to be whimsically fun. A perfect example of that is Star Wars: A New Hope. where it's paced so deliberately, you're constantly moving forward. You know what I mean? That like it's just fun to be on the ride. And I think this lags at times, and to that it sort of makes the ride feel like, can we ramp back up or can I get off? Like it doesn't work in that way. You know what I mean? And pacing is a big deal, especially in a movie where it's like kind of plot driven, really. You know, the characters themselves are not, you know, undergoing some sort of transformative inner journey here. They're essentially just assemble the team. So you need the plot to move. And, you know, one of the things is like they often, when they go to find a new person who they want to have join the team, you know, it's almost like they're like, we got to see this person do something extraordinary so that we can show the audience why they're worthy of being a team member.
And the
And
best
yet,
example of this is when Prince Tarek goes and tames an evil griffin thing.
yeah, he goes and like tames a griffin, and you're kind of like, all right, like I said, standalone, like that was kind of a cool sequence. I enjoyed it. But taming a griffin essentially never comes back into play in this film. So you're like, we spent an awful long time watching him do this, only for it not really to matter at all. It was only meant to convey that he's badass. And I was like, there's not a faster way to like convey that. You know, we really had to watch it. Like the griffin doesn't come with them. He doesn't use it later, or there's not an enemy griffin that he's able to take down, or like there's nothing related to it that like comes back. So you're just kind of like, okay, I guess that was cool. You know, we spent a long time, you know, or the movie itself, they go to find this one guy who's like an old war general. And we're sort of told many times, you know, in the old saying, show, don't tell. Well, here they're telling us that this guy was like a badass.
General Titus was this great commander
Yeah, but
and
like they
warrior.
go find him and then he's just like a drunk in the gutter. And you're kind of like, all right. I mean, there's a subversion of expectations there, which isn't, again, inherently bad. Maybe this guy is still totally badass. But the problem is that now, you sort of have to have him over deliver in however badass he is because we've never seen it. We've just heard it. So, like, in essence, in this movie, yes, he fights, but I mean, he comes across more as just like anybody else fighting. Like, you know, I don't know. Not so badass that I'm like, oh, this totally makes sense why this guy was on the team. I'm like, I don't know. You just seem there's a lot of people who could fire a gun.
The recruiting portion of the movie is so episodic in the sense that they almost go and spend 10 minutes in every single world they go to. They show up, they are outright rejected. Someone does something epic and then just has a change of heart where they decide to come back and join this crew in helping this suicide mission of fighting against Motherworld. It feels so out of place in the sense that if we had started with all these outsiders together in one place and through disaster or crisis or trauma, they're bonded in the decision to stand up to Mother World, it would make more sense. It just, or if it, if Zack Snyder had taken the opposite and it had been stretched out into a series, and each episode of it, we go to a different world in our quest to recruit and build a team, it would make more sense. But in the movie, it just feels so done for the sake of being done.
Yeah, and like I kind of agree with you that there's this every time they find somebody, there's this resistance to like, no, I don't want to join your team. And then they all join. So it was kind of like, you know, this again, like how long until they come on board, you know? Now, there is a pretty decent double cross that I think does work narratively, meaning if the intention was to sort of shock the audience and have them be like, oh, that bastard. It definitely works.
And you're talking about Charlie Hunnam's character, Kai, right? The
Kai.
mercenary.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like the smuggler guy. And he has like a speech where he sort of describes why he joined and that he loves their cause and all this stuff. And he's like, yeah, like I want to be a part of what you guys are doing. only to eventually just be like, I'm just cashing in on bounties. You guys were put out there and it was about money, but I never was a part of your cause. I just lied to your face. And you're like, okay, I mean, every story can use a douchebag. And so, he kind of takes on that role. I think, when I compare it to something that we've talked about recently, when you look at something like The Matrix, right? You have Cypher who double crosses, right? And I think the thing they do well, and I think I mentioned this when we were talking, is in The Matrix, though, they reveal that, they foreshadow that before, which adds an element of tension to all the scenes when they go to see the Oracle, because you're like, well, when is Cypher going to double cross them? We know it's going to happen. So the Matrix isn't playing for the surprise or the gotcha moment. They're playing for this underlying tension that's permeating, this entire scene. And I
Because as an
think,
audience, we know something that the characters don't.
right, we're privy to information that they're not. So we know this is going to happen, but we don't know when or how. Honestly, we just know it's going to happen. And I think that works a tad better, particularly, just because I enjoy The Matrix more. So as an example, I think it works better. But I don't think there's anything wrong with like a gotcha moment, for the viewer. And I think that does work here because I definitely was not necessarily expecting that.
I think my problem is, like, again, on that same idea of a double cross, right? When you're making a reveal to the audience, when we look at Empire Strikes Back, which we know had some influence here on Snyder, the reveal in The Empire Strikes Back for Luke and for the audience happens simultaneously, as it does in this movie. But the weight of the reveal and the effects that it has on the story and the characters is so massive that I think everybody is just kind of like blown away. Whereas I felt like this reveal, while it happens that it's a double cross, at the same time, it doesn't seem totally out of Kai's character or out of the norm for the world. So I remember kind of thinking, watching it the first time, like, I mean, this is just a dude you met in a bar. Like, you didn't think there was a possibility he was gonna double
Yeah, I
cross
know.
you?
That's kind of what I thought to myself, because I was like, oh shit. And then I was like, I mean, I probably should have seen it, even just from a writing standpoint, like his sort of speech, proclaiming that he's a part of their cause and he loves what they're doing. I was like, in retrospect, watching it, you're like, clearly he's deceiving them, But I thought, yeah, Charlie Hunnam did a good job. I don't know. So I don't know. I didn't hate it, but okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about the homages that we, talked about earlier. So two of them that I'm going to bring up is one is the opening scene where the villain basically comes down to that farm town and he has a discussion with the farm town's leader. And this scene is incredibly reminiscent of the opening scene from Inglourious Basterds. Is it Hans Landa? Is that his name? Yeah. So it's incredibly reminiscent of this in that it's dialogue heavy. There's a sick underlying tension, and it's clearly an homage to this scene because they're basically space Nazis. So, and they look it. I mean, he almost looks like Hans Landa.
Oh, he has like that same uniform as like the SS soldier.
Yeah. So we kind of get this vibe that this is an homage to that scene. And I think on a certain level, it works, but I think my issue with some of these homages is that when you do it, you want to do it, but with like a twist so that yours is sort of different enough that you're not just sort of recreating what somebody else already did. Because the trouble you have is you basically have to do it and surpass it. If you don't take it to the next level, even as the same thing, then everybody always looks at it as the lesser scene. So a perfect example of this is in the movie Heat, there's a bank heist. Well, at the beginning of The Dark Knight, the Joker also initiates a bank heist. And this is clearly an homage from Christopher Nolan to Michael Mann in Heat. And he loves this scene. Now, there are elements that actually track visually that make them very similar. Christopher Nolan and Jonathan Nolan, whoever wrote that script, they do enough to twist what the Joker's doing here to reveal something about his character to make this scene feel integral to the movie and not just be another bank heist as a tip of the cap to Heat. In the Joker's case, instead of them just going in and robbing a bank and then walking out and having that firefight, they go in. Well, the Joker is having each of his henchmen on the team take out the person who just completed their step. And this is the Joker's way of, playing sick games with everybody, and reveals a lot about his character. So there's this twist. And I think that's probably the more proper way to do an homage, as opposed to sort of recreating it. Because, yeah, when you recreate it, you stack them up to be compared. I don't think that's necessarily what you want because it's really, really hard to top originals. Even when you go bigger and better, it's just the original is the original. You're like, they did it first. There's something unique about it and people's memory association with that thing. So in this movie, in the second instance that I'll bring up as an homage is they literally go to a cantina, to a bar, which is where they tie. And this is obviously kind of homage to the Mos Eisley Cantina scene in A New Hope, and probably to a certain extent like Jabba's Palace, which is even Star Wars itself, referencing things that had come before. And so again, you sort of run into this problem of like it feels very much like a tip of the cap to Mos Eisley and the Mos Eisley Cantina and that whole scene. But it doesn't really like do anything that makes this scene feel different. Like they go there to find, in Star Wars, they go there to find a pilot. They go here to find this guy. It just doesn't, to me, it doesn't do enough to be anything more than a tip of the cap. Like, hey, this is me recreating this scene because I love it so much. You're like, that's fine, but I mean, it's definitely not better than the Star Wars Cantina scene. So you've run into that problem where it's like, it was it better or was it just your version of it? And I don't know. I think that brings the homage. I think you want to twist it a little bit more. If I was
Instead of setting yourself up
I
for
was just
failure.
giving my two cents, Zack Snyder, all I'm saying is I love the homage. I think you picked two iconic scenes. You just want to twist it a little bit more so that it has more variation to it. And it probably dives deeper into, either how a character ticks or how this advances the story. And I think you would get the result that people would love it. They'd be like, oh my God, that was so cool.
Yeah,
Versus
dude.
like, oh, that's just the cantina.
I can dig it. I can dig
That's just my two cents. So I got that vibe and that was something that I think, yeah, it's just stylistic. I would just my two cents. That's it.
So, the main issue that I had with the movie from a story standpoint actually goes to the massive exposition dumps that he felt compelled to drop for the audience. And I think it didn't do any service to the movie. I think it convoluted things, and I think it robbed us of urgency that we could have, if the characters had revealed this over time as the story advanced, we would have gotten to know these characters better. And the major one is the main character, Cora. Essentially, when she leaves town on their quest, she sits down and says, "Let me tell you for 20 minutes my life story." And I think, for one, we didn't need to see it because you're just walking us through things. And I'm almost like, if you're just going to have a character narrate this and tell us this, then let's lean into the actor and let the actor actually give us this emotionally charged, compelling performance if they're just going to talk to us. But probably an even better way would have been, let's unveil this piece by piece as we shroud, peel back the layers of what happened to this character, Cora, who in the start of the movie is shrouded in mystery.
Yeah, she's
She's
a mysterious outsider.
in this farm community who the only thing we really know is she's totally badass when she murders 25 space Nazis in a barn. And that's enough for me as an audience member to say, there's a lot more here than meets the eye. Let's see. I'm invested to see where this character goes.
Yeah, and that works. I mean, exposition dumps are almost always not great. Even to the extent that if you look at, Star Wars does the slow crawl at the beginning, that just kind of gets that right out of the way. You know, they're like, instead of placing it somewhere in the story and taking up time, George Lucas was able to turn it into this sort of iconic thing associated with Star Wars, even though that's another borrowed trope that he took from, space operas and stuff that from his youth. He didn't invent this thing, but he's able to basically do like a giant exposition dump and just set the scene so that we can jump right into the action. And that doesn't take up time in the middle of the story somewhere where people have to stop and, explain the whole thing. But even, you look at exposition dumps, I think, Star Wars is another good example where, they do have that scene in Obi-Wan's hut where Obi-Wan kind of explains a little bit about the Clone Wars and Luke's father, and they kind of allow this exposition to come out through dialogue. I guess it does work. It's interesting how they were able to sort of incorporate those elements into the larger Star Wars lore so that this scene ended up becoming super, super important. But if you can imagine going back to watching Star Wars the first time, before there were any sequels made or anything, that scene probably felt a little bit like an exposition dump. Right? Like it had no greater meaning to the story we're in at the time, the Clone Wars, or Luke's dad never comes up again, like any of that. And so it probably felt like a little bit of an exposition dump. And even though obviously they're able to do that pretty well by allowing Obi-Wan to sort of, the reason he tells these things about his dad is so that he can give Luke this lightsaber that his dad always wanted him to have, they get to something. I mean, sometimes you got to have a little exposition, I guess is what I'm saying. Even in the greats, you just don't want it to go on too long. If you can keep that pace right, and I think that's what A New Hope does probably better than almost anything, is just it keeps the pace light and keeps moving, and you're always having fun. And if you linger too long, and I think that's probably my number one knock on Rebel Moon is just pace. They just linger too long on these scenes where it's like, dude, this needs to be cut like way down. And if you cut it way down, and you move fast enough, you're kind of hiding maybe some exposition or, some cool action sequences in there, then it works better. It just feels lively. And like, I can't wait to see what happens next just because I'm having so much fun watching everything. Instead, it's like everything drags, and then you're like, ugh, I don't even know why we watch this. Like you said, there's exposition that you're like, I don't even know why I need to know this. It doesn't matter right now. Like, reveal the information when you need the information. Another thing for me that did stand out was like right at the very, very beginning of the movie, they open with this shot of, I believe it's Korra plowing a field against sort of this moon. It's this really actually epic shot. It's like incredible visually. It's kind of stunning. But like part of, I think, is indicative of the film overall is I remember thinking like if we're in this futuristic space world where there's spaceships and like automatic doors and all this different stuff, would somebody realistically be like hand plowing a fucking moon?
No, nobody would ever do that. Nobody
You know what I
wants to
mean?
do that.
Like the shot's really good, but like technology in and of itself sort of like helps lift all boats. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what today, like if you're going to make a phone call, you don't use a rotary phone. Like, we just don't have them anymore because technology advanced to a level where it's like even the poorest person in the world can get a cell phone. You know, like, why is this person hand plowing a field? And again, I think my point is, even if there's a logical in-world explanation for why they are doing that it that way, the problem is that we haven't seen it yet. And so that I think like with his initial epic shot, you're already sort of being challenged on your world a little bit. Does that make sense? Like, my initial thought is like, this doesn't feel believable because why would they be doing that? Like, or like have a robot do it, or like, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, and so I felt that was a little unfortunate, where the shot itself, the cinematography was epic. The shot was dope as hell. It's just
But it's
that,
making you question the authenticity of the world off
yeah,
the
you've
bat.
already made me sort of question, like, I mean, come on. Would that person really be doing that in this world? Like, if you can't get the robots, then you don't plow the field because competition would destroy you. I mean, it would crush you. You know, like, and so even though I think there's elements of good world building throughout this movie, that was not one of them. And that's like the initial moment. So I'm like, you're already where it should be a moment where you're like, awesome. Again, Star Wars. Let's go straight to that opening shot when, you know, the fighter comes in and then the Star Destroyer comes from behind. It's like freaking incredible. And you're like, oh my God, this is so epic. And that's all, you're like literally in a state of awe. You're like, this is incredible. It looks so good. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to see what happens. Not like it's so unbelievable that like this Star Destroyer would be this close to a planet. You know, or something. I don't know. Like, just anything that would sort of like take you out of that moment. And I felt like right out of the gate, I was like, oh, dude, don't do that. 'Cause I'm already like, you know, you think about it, it's like if you need a ride to get anywhere, like you don't call a horse, you know, we're past horses. We got past it. Anything you want, a bus, a taxi, an Uber, or your friend. No one's coming to pick you up on a horse because we've solved that. It's over. You know what I mean? I know there's like, hey, there's the Amish out there and cowboys and all that, but like, just in general, you're like, technology has, we've advanced. We don't do that anymore. And like, hand plowing a field just stuck with me, just as like, oh my God. And it's not even necessary. Like, it doesn't even matter.
It's funny you bring that up because the thing that drives me nuts about the movie, the one thing that drives me nuts is there's just this plot hole that I cannot get over every time I watch it. And it's the fact that the space Nazis from Mother World are incredibly great at conquering the universe. Yet Cora walks into a bar and she's like, "Hey, I'm looking for this disgraced General Titus who led this rebellion." And everybody in the bar is essentially like, "Oh yeah, he's over on this gladiator planet. You can find him there." She flies there, she gets him in 5 minutes, and then at the end of the movie, the space Nazis are so incredibly blown away that she captivated all these dissidents. And I'm like, "Did you guys even try and do your job? Like, space Nazis, you really suck if you can't find someone that she could find it within 2 minutes of walking into a bar."
Yeah, all you had to do was ask.
I mean, that's like the equivalent of, like, following 9/11, you walking down to Applebee's, sitting at the bar and being like, "Hey, does anybody know where Osama bin Laden is?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, he's just right over there. Go pick him up."
You're like, oh shit, all right, I'll take care of it
It was that easy.
myself.
Okay, problem
Yeah,
solved.
and then he's actually there drunk. Just like
So
in the
stupid.
gutter, like,
Drove me nuts. Drove me nuts. And I think the last thing story-wise that I just don't get, I can't get over, is essentially the whole Rebel Moon storyline seems to be driving towards this point of confrontation between Cora and her adopted father, Senator Bolsario. The reveal of the senator still being alive in the movie is reserved for the audience, and I think it was really stupid for Zack Snyder to reveal him to us now and not reveal him to Cora simultaneously.
that's interesting. That's not something I really thought much about. So like, how would you would rather have had like her learn this information and us along with her?
Again, I mean, we know Snyder was influenced by Star Wars. One of the things, as I mentioned earlier, that Lucas does so well is we, along with Luke Skywalker, find out simultaneously that his father was not murdered, that he is still alive as Darth Vader. And I think that that is an incredible story linchpin. And that's why we remember it for what it is, because we learn it along with the character learning it. And the entire scene at the end of the movie where Belsarius is revealed to the audience could have been more shrouded in mystery, so that when the audience finds out who he truly is down the line, could have been the same time that Korra finds out who he is.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it is possible that I get the impression that maybe that would track too close to Darth Vader's reveal. And I don't know if he wanted to like line it up exactly like that, even though it works. I'm assuming he wanted to do a different version of it, at least in some way, so that we're all like, it's not just, an Empire Strikes Back clone. But yeah, I mean, I could see that too, where obviously the best reveals are the ones that are happening simultaneously for a character and the audience. We in the audience should be blown away, but for the character, they should be even more blown away because the consequences within the story should be greater than our outside, perception of it. Like for a character, like Luke, to find out that your father is Darth Vader is just earth-shattering. Or I guess it can't be earth-shattering because we're in a galaxy far, far away. But
Valid point.
world-shattering. But yeah, like I don't know. That's something too. You want to do it with care so that when it does happen, it's a true wow moment. And we've talked about that before in the podcast, examples like, Star Trek Into Darkness, where they do the Khan reveal. And you're like, the audience knows who that is, but the characters don't. So it doesn't really carry any in-world, in fact, I think the characters are all like, but for the so then it, I don't know, it just feels like slightly off where you're like, that's cool that Khan's there, but like it's definitely not the Khan that we know from Wrath of Khan. And it's definitely not for the characters a big deal at all, just some guy. So it doesn't, to me, it doesn't work properly. And if you can set those up and do them right, it's awesome. So, do you have any other major thoughts about Rebel Moon? I mean, like I said, I think my final take is just I'm hoping that now, like, essentially, I'm looking at part one as a giant exposition dump. It's literally the crawl to the beginning of A New Hope. And now I'm hoping part two is like it just picks up and we jump right into the action. And now we can just get into the story and like what happens. It's kind of how I feel,
I
actually.
think that that would be really cool if that's the case, because based on Snyder's plans and Netflix plans, we know this is supposed to be a massive universe. Six movies, an animated series, comic books, a role play game. Like, it could really be incredible if that all comes together, but that's all going to depend on the second half of this story, you know?
I would love to be pumped for like a Zack Snyder film. Like I said, unlike you, I enjoyed the Snyder Cut, but I also didn't, find it to be like masterpiece levels epic or anything. I was like, no, it was definitely an improvement, but not, necessarily like Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, which again, we have a discussion on that. You can go listen. I am excited because hopefully now that it's like we got all these pleasantries out of the way, like, can we really get into a cool story here? And I'm hopeful. Zack Snyder's being given time and money to see this all the way through. So let's see it all the way through. Maybe it's gonna be pretty dope.
I agree. I agree. I mean, I'm excited. I also like the fact that Netflix is trying to do something different by building out their own IP and cinematic universe here. And I'm hopeful that they're successful. But based off of the first entry, the bar for me is very low going forward.
All right. Well, I mean, it did have some other cool things, again, which I think these are proper homages. They did have laser swords. I highly doubt they can call them lightsabers, but they did have laser swords. And I thought that was pretty cool. A laser, an item or, certain elements. You're like, yeah, that clearly pays homage to Star Wars, but in a really cool way. I enjoyed that. I was like, I hope we see more of that. We'd be pretty dope because it's fairly limited, but in all fairness, it was as well in A New Hope. Hopefully we get some cool laser sword action sequences and stuff coming in the future. So I'm definitely, there's a lot here. There's potential. So I'm excited for that. Well, all right, CP, that actually does it for our conversation this week on Rebel Moon Part One. We are looking forward to Rebel Moon Part Two, but more than that, we're looking forward to all of you guys, all of our listeners' thoughts on, Zack Snyder and Rebel Moon. Let us know what you think. Obviously, you're all welcome to send us novels like Ivor, and we do read every single thing that comes in. So again, Ivor, even if we didn't reply directly in the DM, we will get to it. I don't know, I'm interested to see what other people think. And if you haven't seen it, maybe let us know what held you back from checking it out. Did you not even know about it? Was it something that just didn't interest you? Did Zack Snyder? I mean, he's a, sort of the subtitle on this, right? If you're a Snyder fan, I think you were in, but if you're not a Snyder fan, I could see where maybe you'd be like, I'm out. What was it that made like turned you off? We'd be interested to know. And who knows? CP, maybe we'll have a watch party or something, or a live tweet session before we get to part two. Something
We
fun.
might have to do that.
So, anyway, be sure to keep the conversations going. You can find us and all of our links at filmmakerscompass.com. You can follow the show at Film Comp Podcast on all the major social media channels. And you can follow me at Big Kid D Man. CP.
You can follow me at IndyCal5. Thanks for hanging out and talking Rebel Moon Part 1 with us. I hope you are on the lookout for Part 2. Thanks for hanging out. We'll see you back here next week. And until then, keep watching movies.